Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Wednesday, April 17th. We have a public hearing on two bills. I'm going to open the bills simultaneously so that if you came to speak on either or both, you need to speak only once. They're on the same general topic. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2073 and House Bill 2495. Will you please give us a preview?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2073 is a standard placeholder bill that updates the rates on the forest products harvest tax, and those there's five separate fees that go to funding fire prevention, research, forest maintenance in different funds. And then House Bill 2495 is sponsored by Rep. Hovey and deals with some larger issues of forest management and funding.
Great. Thank you. Representative Hovey.
Good morning. Let's see. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, Paul Holvey, State Representative from House District 8. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to House Bill 2495. As we all know, forest fire events across the West have been increasing in size, severity, and cost. And our current capacity to suppress and mitigate these events is also increasingly inadequate and putting our communities and our general fund at risk. I introduced House Bill 2495 to draw attention to this problem and point towards a couple possible solutions. I recognize that better forest management could help reduce some risk, but House Bill 2495 is about having the resources to fight wildfires in our forests. We spent a lot of hours, and as some may know, especially in the audience, that I've brought similar proposals before on this, sometimes offering money to counties, sometimes offering tax credits for logs milled in Oregon. None of those concepts were received favorably, though I still think they were good ideas. But today I want to spend a little bit of time before I talk specifically about the bill, just focusing on some of the history of timber harvests and tax revenue from the timber industry, and really kind of pointing out some what I consider to be inequities that have been existing since the early 90s. So I'm going to go to my first slide. I'm talking about revenue. And I just want to briefly touch on the timber harvest in Oregon. And you'll see this graph displays some of the historic timber harvest volume in Oregon from 1979 to 2017. It shows timber harvest on public lands, which are basically in the blue. And then the green lands is the private harvest. You'll see that there's a really large drop off in the right around 1990. The Endangered Species Act started limiting the amount of cut because of some problems with habitat and endangered species. And in 1994, the Northwest Forest Plan sort of implemented some of those restrictions. And you can see the little bit of a dip there in around 2009, you know, from the Great Recession. But I want to flip to the next chart, and we'll look at a little bit about the tax revenues that have flown that have come from the logging activity. It's kind of a stark contrast to this relatively stable harvest that we saw from the private industry. So this is the private timber tax revenue. And there's some really important factors that impacted this. You'll notice that the blue is down below is generally property tax and fire taxing districts on the bottom. The orange was the severance tax. And it largely disappeared as a result of 1999 legislative action in House Bill 3575. And that, and then on top, the small gray area, that's from the forest products harvest tax. And so you'll notice that that severance tax that disappeared, you know, was complicated because of Measure 50 when it basically put a cap and a limit on our property taxes. And that was basically, we couldn't increase property taxes, as you know, by more than 3%. And so switching to a complete property tax system and eliminating the severance tax reduced revenues to our counties and to our schools largely. And as you know, that also shifted the burden of financing schools to the state. And as I'm sure Rep. Smith Warner would note, that that loss from that local funding, tax fund, property tax funding, was never replaced at the state level. So I think this graph is really indicative of why I'm bringing this bill forward. It's been a long-standing issue, you know, 25 years or so, that we've been working without that severance tax in our revenue system, and it hasn't been replaced. So I'm just going to flip to the next chart. This is another way to look at that same graph. Again, the blue is the property tax, which includes the fire district assessments that are in the property tax system. And then you can see the privilege tax, or commonly called the severance tax, is in the orange and largely disappears. There's still a little bit of it left. I don't know exactly how much, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars. I don't think it's more than a million left. And then on the far right, you see the darker brown color is the forest products harvest tax, which, you know, seems to be pretty constant along the way. So, and there's reasons for that. And we'll flip to the next chart. And this shows what, you know, the severance tax or privilege tax was over time. Back pre-90s, it was at basically 5% in Eastern Oregon and 6.5% in Western Oregon. And you can see how that phases down and goes to zero. And so that's what this is all about, is how are we fighting fires? How are we, dealing with these revenue shortfalls, whether they're at the county level or the state level? And how are we gonna deal with forest fires in the future as they keep getting larger, more catastrophic? It is a troubling scenario if you're looking at the future of climate change. Next, I'm gonna move on to the budget a little bit about how we fight forest fires, and I'm gonna switch quickly to just a graph that we have here that describes the acres that are protected by the Department of Forestry and are largely from general fund and some property tax and assessments, and the forest products harvest tax as well. So there's two different parts of fire coverage. One is the base fire, and the other is emergency fire costs that are incurred by large fires, and that's one of the biggest concerns, is those large fires as we go forward. So I want to just flip over to see who pays for this base fire budget. So the public timber landowners pay 100% of theirs. On the private timber landowner side, you can see that the general fund pays about 56%, and the private timberland owners pay about 44%. So that's important because when you remember that of the protected ODF lands, that 77% of it is private. So, just pointing out what seems to be an inequity to me, at least that's my opinion of that. So we're going to move on to the base fire protection funding. Remember, I was telling you it was you have your base fire funding and then your emergency fire funding. So your base fire funding, you know, has a formula where, you know, there's a 50-50 split on the first 20 million between between our general fund and the private sector. So, and then the next 30 million then falls on our general fund generally. And once you get past that 50 million, we do have an insurance plan with Lloyd's of London that kicks in for up to $50 million. And so that, if you're looking at the, when you break this down and, you know, the public dollars are in the blue on this screen and the private effort is on the right-hand side in the green. And you can see that, you know, it stays pretty close for per biennium around 30 million or so, and that you know, it stays pretty constant, it seems. So it goes from 35 down to 28, and the percentages stay right around, they seem like they're declining a little bit, but they stay right around just over 30% from the private and the rest being the public. And we switch over to the emergency fire that I was talking about. So this is what happens when in our large fires. And this one's a little bit more stark. You can see, the blue representing the dark blue, the general fund. And the light blue is largely from the federal funds, FEMA largely, and also the U.S. Forest Service, which pays for its own, so they're sort of out because the U.S. Forest Service, I think the last figures I saw were around 240 million that they spend. So they spend a considerable amount of money and they take care of their own costs as such. I won't say they necessarily take care of their own forest management very well, but certainly their costs. So, and you will note that in the 2013-15 biennium, we did 2 years in a row, we hit 25 million on the insurance for a total of 50 million in that biennium, which was really a big help. But you'll also notice on the right-hand side, the private funding is for per biennium, these figures are. So it doesn't usually go much over 27 million. There's a few anomalies where that happened in this last cycle, where it did go over 27 million, and that's largely because under the Forest Land Protection Fund, how it distributes money, it's capped at not spending more than 13.5 million. And so that private input to firefighting doesn't really change. It's always going to be per biennium, right around 27 million if we have enough fire to trigger all of that. So it does show a substantial amount of, you know, public effort. And what's really concerning me is you know, our insurance. If we lose that insurance, our general fund is really going to be at risk, because there's another 50 million that without the insurance would come from our general fund. So that's really a big concern. And another big concern is the FEMA money. If I think we saw some wavering on whether FEMA money would stand in California this last fire season, really troubling with that big campfire and some of those others. And so that really is troubling as well. And then, of course, the dark blue on the left being the general fund. And the general fund would be hugely impacted with a loss of that insurance or the loss of FEMA money for certain. And so then we're going to move on to the total fire funding. And this is where you see both the base fire funding and those costs, and you know, along with the large fire, emergency fire costs. And this is what you find is who's paying how much. And this is for Again, this is for the ODF protected lands. There are some monies, the BLM does pay for ODF to protect their lands. In the past, they have at least. And so that's a direct bill, essentially. But you'll see that those figures, just the percentages, still, you see that the private on the right, the green, still the private. I thought the insurance was really important to point out here. And then the public land. So those are pretty self-explanatory, I think. And there's a pie chart to kind of look at it from a different perspective. And this is over a five-year period and seeing what the percentages are of how these fires are being funded as far as the costs. So that to me is a reason that we should be reexamining this. As much as we want to, try to fund our services in the state, whether it's education, public safety, the dollars that used to go to the counties for public safety and schools, have disappeared along with that severance tax when it disappeared. And now the state's, in a position where we oftentimes have to backfill public safety in many counties. And of course, we're now trying to fund all the schools. And so, when I look at that pie chart, from my opinion, that is not an equitable arrangement based on the value of and who's receiving the benefit of the timber. And so this last slide here is another. This just shows you the forest products harvest tax and how it's divided up. This is what you'll see in House Bill 2495. You have these four different elements that the forest products harvest tax goes to, and a dollar goes to OFRI, the Oregon Forest Research Institute, and roughly between there's two other pieces that go to Oregon State University, which probably totals close to a dollar. And the Forest Practices Act also has about $1.50. And when you get down to it, the piece of the forest products harvest tax that gets the least amount of money out of this tax is the fire protection fund, which gets 62 cents. And this is all per 1,000 board feet. So being that fighting fires is our priority, it doesn't really reflect in how this tax is spent, that is the priority for the Department of Forestry. So in thinking about this, I'm just thinking about how this works. I came to my mind, well, how do our neighbors deal with this? How does the state of Washington deal with this? Because they have similar forests and they have a similar climate. And so I started, with the help of Legislative Revenue Office and the Legislative Fiscal Office, helped develop all the data for these slides. Also asked them to look at the state of Washington and how they're funded. And just trying to compare, and it's not an easy task to compare because of some differences, but we managed to figure out a couple of ways to do it. So I'm going to switch to this comparison next. And first, you have to look at the total forest acres in the state. I mean, that's relevant to property taxes for certain, and the revenues that come from that property tax. We actually have, as you can see, a few million more acres than the state of Washington. And our harvest volume is also larger. You can see that's roughly, on an average, it's pretty close to 4 billion board feet that is harvested in Oregon. In Washington, quite a bit less. And and then you look at the harvest value down below, and you can see, and these are from 2017, you can see what the harvest value of those of that amount of board feet is. So there's definitely more acres in Oregon. We have more logging and definitely a higher value of the timber. And so we'll move on to the taxes on that. And this is what, and considering what if we were if we were taxing at Washington's rate, or no, excuse me, Oregon's rate is for all their fire costs and the, under the forest products harvest taxes, $3.77 per thousand board feet. In the state of Washington, they are at $16.97, trying to compare the volume to volume. So that's four times more in taxes and revenue that go to their general fund, actually, and that's how they fight their fires, is out of the general fund. Because I've heard comments that Washington pays for all of theirs out of the general fund, so why shouldn't Oregon? Well, Washington also taxes four times higher, you know, and so, and it goes to their general fund, and that's how they handle it. Our forest products harvest tax doesn't go to the general fund. It goes straight into these other accounts. So that I think is really important. And so I wanted to take this to the next level here and just show you what the we call it cutting taxes here, or a harvest tax, severance tax. And you can see what the taxes are on that. And Washington taxes a bit differently. But this is really an eye-opener. Their property taxes, if you'll remember, are about that we have more acreage. But they end up with a little bit more in property taxes, even though they have, you know, a few million more acres or a few million acres less than Oregon. And so, but it's about the, you know, close to the same and, you know, not too far off. But the severance, the harvest, or the cutting taxes, substantially different. And it really makes you think that they have less timber and, you know, they're just taxing more and they harvest less and they're getting substantially more money than the state of Oregon does in those taxes. And when you compare their property taxes down, you know, it's also, you know, as I was saying, if you compared apples to apples, their property taxes are much higher. And if you put all that together, the taxes per acre in Oregon is $2.70 per acre, and in Washington, $4.15 per acre. So I'm going to keep moving. And this is that same slide, kind of expanded out. And this one basically shows, you know, that, you know, Washington taxes on value. So that's important to know, and Oregon taxes on volume. So when we try to convert that, you know, that's where we come up with in that first graph, you know, on this where it says taxing by 1,000 board feet, Washington is at $16.97, and that's what it would be in Oregon if we were to tax at that rate, 88 million compared to the 37 million that we're now getting. And so if we were actually to adjust that for the value of the timber, it even gets more extreme, where you will see that we would go all the way up in total tax to 133 million. And I gotta tell you, it's really important to note that these are annual figures. These are not biannual figures. So that that is something that alarms me a little bit. I wonder how Washington seems to be able, when I go up to Longview and see the logs going off, you know, summer Oregon logs, but it hasn't, they have a lot of volume too, and they cut timber, and yet they pay quite a lot more in both property taxes and cutting taxes. And so that, I mean, in comparison, I gotta ask, you know, since we got rid of the severance tax, it's created this huge disparity between our states and also caused this fiscal issues that we have at both the state and the local levels. So I just, you know, just wanted to point that out. It's just really important to consider, you know, the overall impacts of what's going on. I think I may have missed the slide, but back in
Representative Holvey?
Yes.
Could you, I know the next slide explains the bill. Could you get to that slide?
Sure. I'm actually there. So this is the proposal, I mean, the House Bill 2495 as introduced, you know, raised the, created a new fire suppression fund, raised the forced harvest the forced products harvest tax by about 92 cents, and puts it into this fund, basically to set it aside for fighting forest fires instead of, and trying to get another kind of policy in place. But after looking at that, looking at all these numbers, I realized it was completely inadequate. And if we're really going to be serious about helping to protect our general fund and mitigate the future increases that we're going to see, and the potential of potentially having our own self-insurance fund, because I think we need to plan for the day when Lloyd's of London will not be offering us an insurance policy anymore. So I have the proposed increase by four times, just to come close to Washington, to take it up to increasing the forest harvest the forest products harvest tax up to $16 from just about $4. It's at $3.77 now, which is a really large increase, four times, and I'm sure people's eyes are rolling at that. But you know, these costs are really, really, we have to get a handle on them going forward. And so that's, you know, at the high end, I think that would be adequate to get our own insurance fund put together and to protect our general fund from catastrophic fire. Another way to look at that is to reinstate the severance tax, and figuring out about 3% would get us about $96 million. It would, you know, it would increase the timber revenues by $58 million, excuse me, to equal the $96 million in the state of Washington. So that would be in addition to the forest products harvest tax on the just raising it by $12 and going up to $16 on the upper one. Just raising the forest products harvest tax would net us about $54 million. And I that's my proposal on amendments, if the committee would, you know, consider, you know, what level they want to jump into this, if they do at all. I think that we need to do something like this pretty soon, or we're going to be really struggling with our general fund for years to come. And I think if we were still had that severance tax that went away due to Measure 50 and legislative action in 1999, we would be in much, much better shape fighting these fires, keeping things under control, and having a better public safety and education system, both at the county and state levels. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Findley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Obviously, you dug into it, and it's a great presentation, and you certainly care about the issue, and I appreciate that a lot. The main question I have is currently the governor appointed a wildfire council to study all the issues and look at it, and with a fairly short time frame of this fall to have their first draft report come out. You think this might be premature to do that? I mean, the council's got a wide degree of latitude with coming up with a lot of the things that you've identified here that's probably going to be an output of this product. So would it not be a bit premature to do this while they're mulling this around? I think there's actually a September deadline for some of their work.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Chair Nathanson, Rep. Findley. You know, I looked at that proposal, and, you know, I've talked to the governor's staff about it as well, you know, and certainly I, you know, I'm fine with them moving forward with that kind of activity, you know, but and they're looking at how they can mitigate, how they can better coordinate with the feds and other partners, and those are things they already do. And the other piece of that council was to look at fire funding and its shortfalls and trying to figure out something else to do. But I will tell you, for the last 15 years I've been in this building, They've been looking at those fire costs, and they've had several committees. They've got ongoing committees looking at costs, and they keep coming back with the same from the industry perspective, is that their general fund should fight forest fires, not the private. And so that's their philosophical difference, and nothing has happened. And so to me, you know, with all due respect to the governor's office, I think it's a fine conversation, but it's, from my seat, it's kicking the can down the road time and time and time again on this, because this has been an ongoing issue that hasn't been addressed. And so every time we try to have this conversation, it goes to another committee or a council, and let's just talk it to death. We are at a point right now where we have to start doing something. We've had plenty of talk about this. It comes down to, we need the funds to fight fires.
I appreciate that. Follow up?
Yes.
And I completely concur with that. I understand, but there is probably an overlying issue, in my belief, is we're shifting the mission of fire suppression somewhat from forest practices, fire suppression, and we're pretty well focused on that, and we've done an incredible job. But we've expanded that role, and now there's a lot of land that has not enjoyed protection in the past, that does not pay any taxes related to fire suppression, and a lot of land, like there's instances last year in north central Oregon, a lot of state resources went and helped out in fire suppression that have never paid a forest harvest tax, have never paid a privilege tax, have never paid any of those taxes. And if it's a role that we're expecting Oregon Department of Forestry to start taking in conjunction with other bureaus like the Oregon Military Department, then that's not a reasonable cost for forest landowners to pay. That is a reasonable cost for the general fund to pay. And that's a discussion that needs to have in concert with all this, in addition to the Wildfire Council. To pull all together, I mean, it's a pretty big shift.
Yeah, just Madam Chair, Representative Finley, I'm not exactly sure what lands you're talking about, but I'm assuming you're talking about the federal lands, or what lands aren't paying into that, because it's, there is property tax assessments for fire districts, and then there's the harvest tax, and so, I mean, the Forest Service pays for all of theirs. The BLM pays the state oftentimes to protect their fire lands. I guess I disagree with your statement. So.
Substation fire and school fire, all of the fires in north central Oregon are not paying any of these taxes you're speaking about.
It's, no.
And those are the lands. I mean, those are some of the roles, some of the fringe areas that we're asking state to start looking at doing a different role. I mean, through cooperatives and other roles. So that's what I'm referring to. Forest Service pays theirs, and they do a great job. BLM pays for theirs. They do a great job. If it's Oregon State forest land, they do a pretty good job. But we've expanded the role through ODF. And others, and the fire marshal's office, and that's what the conflicts, or some of the conflicts are. So I would love to have an off-net conversation.
We'll have to talk about that a little more, probably.
But thanks for your work.
Yes, I'm going to do a time check with the committee. Yes, we'll have questions from the committee while Representative Holvey is still with us. We have 9 people signed up to testify, and I do hope to hear from everyone who has come this morning to present at public hearing. Representative Reschke.
And my question is probably more for Jamie, in that, is this a 3/5 vote?
To raise revenue?
Yes.
I believe so.
It is. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Holvey?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll now get to the list of those who have testified. And first, I would like to hear from Anthony Davis. And also coming up at the same time, come on up, would be Peter Doherty and Kyle Abraham.
This is a good time, but it's too early to do this.
Anthony Davis, you're first. And I know that we've cut into your schedule this morning. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Greetings, Chair Nathanson and the committee. I'm Anthony Davis. I am the interim dean of forestry at Oregon State University. And I do appreciate being able to go first this morning because I'm also due to testify in a Ways and Means hearing that's happening right now. I'm here today to speak specifically about House Bill 2073 and address the importance of this bill to our college. I've submitted written testimony to the committee and will respect everyone's time by only making two key points. Harvest tax dollars are absolutely critical, a core part of our college funding, and they are fully integrated across all of our teaching, research, and outreach programs. And we are extraordinarily appreciative to Oregon's timber industry for their steadfast support and supporting our college through this self-imposed tax. Our college does work to address vital ecosystems, rural livelihoods, and what is often defined as that Oregon landscape. We address issues of sustainability head on, talking about water quality, endangered species, and providing value from resources that we can grow here in the state. We work to make sure that there's multiple use management being practiced and expanded across forests, regardless of ownership, recognizing longstanding values and also the contemporary shift in what is important in our forests. Those rural economies that we have to invest in those, we have to grow those, we have to study them. Understanding how trees grow, what we can do to maximize the value of the products that come from our forests, how to protect our forests in a changing climate and with changing use patterns, those are critical areas of study and of teaching and of outreach from our college. All of those are supported by the harvest tax. So I want to recognize that this is the only state that we know of that has a forest industry where the timber industry has stepped up to impose a tax on themselves and have a portion of that go to support education and research. Approximately 90 cents of the harvest tax goes to support our research activity, 10 cents towards education. And this is one of three key legs that we have in terms of state-supported funding, with about 15% of our college budget coming from Education General Fund, about 16% from the statewide public service, and 10% from harvest tax dollars. That diversity of sources is important as we work to continue to evolve our programs to make sure that we make the changes that provide what Oregonians need to have this forest landscape we all cherish. And so with that in mind, we support moving House Bill 2073 from revenue to Ways and Means without recommendation. And I thank you for your time today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for being with us. Any questions? Looks like you need to run to another hearing.
Go Beavs.
Go Beavs. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Peter Doherty, and I serve as the Oregon State Forester and Director of the Department of Forestry. I'm here with Cal Abraham, our incoming Private Forest Division Chief. The department appreciates the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2073. As already mentioned, this is a regularly bill that we submit to adjust tax rates. House Bill 2073 amends ORS 321015 to establish three forest harvest products tax rates for calendar years 2020 and 2021. These taxes support Oregon State University's Forestry Research Laboratory, OSU's Professional Forestry Education, and the Oregon Department of Forestry's Administration of the Forest Practices Act. And with that introduction, I'll turn it over to Kyle to discuss the rate for administering the Forest Practices Act.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, I am Kyle Abraham. The Forest Practices Act is vital in assuring the public that private lands are managed with forest with resource protections and that a stable regulatory environment exists for forest businesses. Enacted in 1971 and modified many times since, it regulates timber harvest, road construction and maintenance, treatment of slash chemical use and other practices on private lands. The Act requires reforestation and scientifically supported best practices for all aspects of forestry, including stream protection, road construction, pesticide application, sensitive wildlife sites, and other resources. The Act encourages investment in private forest lands by providing a consistent regulatory environment and constitutes a social contract with the public, providing assurance that private forests are managed responsibly. The success of the private forest program depends on shared responsibility and partnerships among stakeholders, forest landowners, operators, other state agencies, and the department. The program gains compliance with the Forest Practices Act by maintaining an effective balance of science-based rules, incentives, technical assistance, and uniform enforcement. For the Department of Forestry, this bill maintains the concept of shared responsibility between the general public and forest landowners for resource protection and the public benefits provided by the Forest Practices Act. This shared responsibility is reflected in the joint funding of the program by public funds and harvest tax revenue. The tax rates established by the bill are set on a per thousand board feet harvested basis. The rate is calculated considering current biennium ending balance, projected budget requirements for the next biennium, and forecasted harvest levels for the next 2 years. As shown in attachment one, Oregon harvest levels declined during the 90s due to reduction in harvest from federal lands. Attachment two shows resulting rate increases as budget needs were spread across lower harvest volumes. Since 1999, the harvest level generally stabilized between 3.5 and 4 billion board feet per year, and tax rates stabilized as well. We are currently anticipating annual harvest for the next 2 years to hold steady at approximately 3.6 billion board feet. The Oregon Department of Revenue collects the harvest tax and transfers the receipts to the Department of Forestry on a quarterly basis. At this time, we still have 1 of 8 revenue transfers remaining in the current biennium, and this will occur in May. Because the new rates in House Bill 2073 for the next 2 year period are based in part on the ending balance in this biennium, we would suggest rates not be inserted into the bill yet. In addition to the current biennium actual revenue consideration, the harvest tax is directly linked with the department's next biennial budget. Therefore, the rate calculations must remain fluid until the agency's budget bill is at or near completion. The link necessitates a concurrent consideration of House Bill 2073 and the agency's budget bill, House Bill 5019, in the Joint Ways and Means Committee during the final legislative budget process.
In summary, the Department of Forestry supports House Bill 2073 and welcomes the opportunity to work with the Legislative Assembly as the revenue and the budget process moves forward. Thanks for your time and consideration, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
I'll ask one.
Okay.
Because I'm a little familiar with this budget from my previous role. When I look at how much of the rate, now those are rates, that's not amount of money raised, those are the rates and how the money is spent. It looks like we're spending a pretty stable amount on some of those elements. But what can you tell us about the likelihood that we will continue to have a Lloyd's of London insurance policy, and how many other states have the benefit of this kind of insurance policy against a major loss?
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, thanks for that question. We are the only state, and I think the only entity in the world that has a catastrophic fire insurance policy for paying for the cost of suppression among a certain amount. And we work very hard to maintain the relationships that have been going on quite a number of years with Lloyd's of London. And it's that relationship and the support of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee. And we have submitted a request to have the insurance fund, funded this year. So we have already secured the policy for this upcoming year. And I think with our complete and coordinated system, they understand what we do. It plays into the whole catastrophic market. That's the market we're in. But as now we keep convincing them that we do everything to minimize the risk to collecting on that.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I do.
Yes.
I also have testimony on House Bill 2495, if you would like me to do that now or come back.
No, as long as you're up here.
Great.
So do you think it's about 2 minutes or so?
Yeah, real quickly. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on large wildfire funding. For the record, the department has no position on House Bill 2495. House Bill, the bill proposes to create a wildfire suppression fund, increase the harvest tax for the purpose of funding fire suppression and readiness, and it would make three of the harvest tax rates permanent. In terms of the new wildfire suppression fund, it would create a second fund that would parallel the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, collecting monies to provide the same function as the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. However, the bill would require the new fund to be fully exhausted before we use the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. This approach would complicate our financial tracking. Currently, the Emergency Fire Cost Committee has two staff positions to administer the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, and ODF would have to administer the new fund with an already understaffed finance program. At the original bill, the new funds would be exhausted annually based on the cost of recent fire seasons, based on the bill as introduced. And again, the bill would more than double the wildfire portion of the state harvest tax from 62 cents to $1.42. And the amount would be split with some going into the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund and some going into the new fund. Lastly, this bill proposes to permanently institute the other three harvest tax rates in ORS 321015 that support the Oregon State University's Forestry Research Laboratory, OSU Professional Forestry Education, and the Forest Practice Act. These are the rates we just spoke about. This change could impact our ability to administer the Forest Practice Act, as a harvest tax rate is established biannually to align with our budget. And so that would end the projected harvest volume, as I just discussed. So I'm not sure why they're changing that process in this bill as well. And thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for being here. I think Rep. Finley raised a really good question with Representative Holby in terms of the work of the Wildfire Council. I realize it may not be entirely fair to ask you to predict the action of a citizen-based council, but you are heavily involved in that. Is it your expectation that that council is going to have a robust conversation around funding, these funding issues?
Chair Nathanson's Representative Marsh, yes. The committee under that council that is addressing fire response, fire suppression and funding has already met. It has a work plan that we will be bringing to the council on April 23rd to say, is this the right work plan? It will address our response and whether we have a sustainable fire organization given the increased severity of fire seasons, and it will address funding. In fact, it's the first charge that's listed in the governor's executive order.
And specifically the issue of cost sharing?
I assume that everything's on the table, including the insurance policy and the work plan.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Chris Edwards, Clint Bentz, and Ken Cummings. And if everyone can keep it to 3 minutes, we'll stay a few minutes late and we'll still be able to hear from everybody.
Okay. So Representative Nathanson, Chair Nathanson, and the members of the committee, my name is Clint Bentz, and I'm a CPA with 30 years of experience in the forest products sector, as well as being a small woodland owner. And I've been involved in property tax, the establishment of the last property tax bill for small woodland owners. As others are going to testify today, Oregon landowners pay a much larger share of the fire suppression costs than any of the other neighboring states. We generally see this as suppressing fires, a responsibility of local government. We don't charge landowners for the cost of putting out fire in their house. But there's lots of other issues that are here. But I wanted, they asked me to come, and I wanted to testify particularly about some of the claims about whether forestry is paying its fair share. One of the things that was missing in the analysis that was done, we just saw, was the income tax. So Washington has a 0.4% business and occupation tax on timber. Oregon has a 9 to 10% income tax on the timber. So that's, you know, our general fund is getting a lot more out of the forest products than Washington can dream about because of the income tax. And whether or not the landowners in state or out of state, this is considered Oregon source income. And so the income from the sale of timber comes to Oregon. We say half of Oregon is forested. Of the 30 million acres, there's 110,000 private owners that hold 10 million acres of Oregon forest land. Nearly all of these are Oregon residents. Just to compare, 34,000 farmers, so roughly a third of the number of people are farmers in Oregon, and they hold 16 million acres of farmland. The forest product sector generates a $12.7 billion in economic activity here in Oregon. Ag generates about $5.4 billion. So the harvest of timber is considered Oregon source income, so that's paid here in Oregon. And we're not extracting a natural resource out of the ground. This is a crop. It's something that, you know, we're harvesting something that was planted 20, 30, 40, 50, 80 years ago, and which has been tended at great cost and effort over that period of time. There's some people that have said that we have, you know, we're underpaying our workers, or we're extracting that. Wages in the forest product sector have been constant with inflation adjusted over the last 40 years. Other manufacturing has come up over that time, but Oregon timber forest products wages are family wages, and they are at or above all other industrial wages, and certainly exceed median wages, especially considering where these jobs are, which is in rural areas. We manage our lands. That's how we earn our living, by the sound and sustainable management of our land. Oregon has two ways to help that encourage that. One is our restrictive zoning laws, which restrict these lands from being carved up. The other is through our special assessment programs, which support the conduct of farming and commercial forestry. And we do that by valuing these lands at their use value rather than their highest and best value. We're looking at the tax expenditure report for this upcoming biennium. It says the annual cost of reduction for ag land is $198 million a year. For forest land, it's only $55 million a year. One of the differences there is that ag land is taxed, the special use value is based on its rental value. For forest land, it's actually based on the actual sales of commercial blocks of forest land between commercial owners. So that $55 million expenditure, tax expenditure, is really the small woodland owners who do have higher and better uses for their land than doing it in forestry. We have not had standing timber on the property tax roll since 1977. There's two reasons why we stopped that practice. The first was that valuing 10 million acres of private timber every year is kind of expensive. It's also contentious because we have wildly fluctuating values. We've got unique growing characteristics on each property. And when we're trying to do that value, we have to determine some sort of a net present value based on future harvest and all that. So it was those lawsuits happening all the time. And so they decided to stop for that reason, and also because landowners were liquidating their stands early to manage their property tax bills, and that was counter to the state's interest in having sound forest policy.
Mr. Bentz, you may not have heard it, but the timer went off a little bit ago. Have you covered everything that's
in
your
written testimony? Thank you.
And as you see, we have it available. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Forest and Industries Council, also known as OFIC. I am going to take a 15-minute presentation, and basically cut it down to one slide. as I sat and listened to Representative Holvey burn 45 minutes off the clock talking about a lot of information to which we are shaking our heads saying, where is this coming from? I can assure you that we are going to be going back to our office and going sentence by sentence piece of information by piece of information and providing a sound rebuttal. So I'll just say we oppose House Bill 2495. We think it's getting ahead of the Wildfire Council. It endangers FEMA funding. And we think that a lot of the alleged facts, some of us would call them alternative facts, are just plain not right. We support moving House Bill 2073 to Ways and Means without recommendation, where it can be married up with the ODF budget, as usually happens. And I will leave you with one factoid. The percent of fire starts from landowner activity, 4%. So about 25% of fire starts in Oregon are from lightning. About 75% are from human activity. Of all fire starts, 4% are from landowner activity. And I skipped over all the percentages that we already pay in landowner assessments and the gross numbers for the sake of your time management of your committee. But I did want to put an exclamation point on this fact. So
can I
turn on that?
Mr. Edwards.
Yep.
Can I suggest that you explain to us slide 7? You still have a minute left.
Which one is that? I can't see the numbers, so.
That one.
So landowners in Oregon are paying more than in any other state. That's 50% of ODF's base fire budget protection, up to 60% of cost for severity resources. That's air attack, additional crews, things like that. 50% of premium for Oregon's catastrophic insurance policy and 50% of the first $20 million in large fire costs. So this comes up when everybody focuses on that, the little piece of the harvest tax, and the harvest tax funds many things, House Bill 2073, only one part of it is fire. That doesn't mean the fire is less important. It just means that fire is funded largely from landowner assessments, which are set at the local level, at the Fire Protection Association district level. And so landowners are paying, and they're paying a lot more than represented by focus on harvest taxes. So
thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Kenneth Cummings. I'm here as chair of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee that oversees Oregon's Forest Land Protection Fund. Represents basically all the timberland owners in Oregon pay into that one way or the other, and I'm here to speak in opposition to House Bill 2495. I am not going to go through the over 100-year history of landowners protecting forest lands in Oregon, but I would highlight for you this spring the committee voted unanimously to accept a proposal from the Department of Forestry to forward a strategic investment to use forward-looking infrared technology beginning this year. We've been borrowing that from the military and the state of Colorado when it's been available. We are fast-tracking that. It's over $750,000 investment, and it is 100% landowners, about 700,000 of that. And we hope to see that on the one fixed wing aircraft the department owns this summer. So there's an example of landowners kind of getting it done. I just thought I'd make that. And I just want to say Oregon's complete and coordinated fire system protection system is completely underwritten by the commitment of landowners in the state and is unique in the nation and cannot be understated. In 1967, ORS 321 was passed, and I'm going to read this because it's pretty important. The Legislative Assembly finds it is in the interest of the state of Oregon that the public as a whole share responsibility for protecting the forests of the state by making funds available from time to time for suppression of fires caused by the public. And I will go back to the point that was just made, and the reason I would like to highlight a couple of data points for you is exactly that. 96% of the fires that we're dealing with in terms of starts, tens of thousands of fires either come out of the sky or somebody mowing their lawn or doing something in the backyard. 4% come from harvest-related activities and logging. When you look at the acres burnt, human-caused fires, even though they're a small amount of the big acres, lightning is our biggest problem when it comes to acres, not timberland harvests. Lightning is no respecter of property lines, just like fire. And so whether or not those large costs come out of the sky or are publicly oriented, it just seems like this is clearly a public burden. 10 years ago, we've been holding our own for, when you look back at a 10-year look back, a pretty reasonable fire season, around $44 million. And you've heard a lot of these numbers. And when you add it all up, in general, pretty close to about 50% of the cost, no matter how you cut it. And when you add in-kind contribution during a fire season of people putting equipment and people on the fire lines helping out and being part of the militia that we so broadly speak to, landowners are probably over 50% because their timberlands are on the line. They're out there. They're making it happen. One last point that has come up through the different conversations, I guess an advantage of being last, I do not need to regale you with the details around the governor's wildfire council, but I appreciate the questions that have been brought up already. But the governor has convened one of the largest cross-sections of the public ever to review this critical topic, and I would suggest that let the work of that council go forward and be in lockstep on the other side of September with some of these things as we see what those outcomes look like. I appreciate being with you here today. I'm more than willing to answer any questions, but please do not underestimate and leave off to the side the amount of landowner contribution to the system in Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next person, I think it's Jim, and the last name might be James.
Correct. Jim.
And after that, we will hear from Chuck Willer and Ernie Niemi. 3 minutes each. Committee will run just a couple minutes late, but.
Yeah. Chair Nathanson, representatives of the Revenue Committee. My name is Jim James. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, an organization that represents the family owner's interest in the state of Oregon. I have my written comments. A lot of my statements are consistent with what you heard on the previous panel. So I'll just focus on what I believe are a couple of key points and perhaps what your decision-making process should include. This bill, it appears that is suggesting that forest landowners are the cause of fires, therefore they should pay for it, 4%. It's inconsistent with reality to even suggest that the forest landowners ought to be paying more for fire protection. When you consider all that money they already put into their fire protection to protect their home and property, and if there is a fire on their property, they have the loss and the cost of reforestation. It's just irrational to think that they should pay more for fire protection. And it appears that this legislative session, there are a large number of bills that have this theory that forest landowners aren't paying their fair share. You saw lots of bars and graphs that suggest that that's true. Well, those numbers probably came from a good source, but the rationale that goes into the interpretation of those numbers is just plain bogus. When you look at the history of the taxing system in Oregon for forest products, there's rationale for the changes that have taken place. I noticed on the bar graph used that they started in 1979. They should have went back a little farther than that to see what the real history of taxes in the state are. But there's a lot of changes that have taken place, forest practice laws, land use laws, and just the structure of the wood products industry that have justified these changes. I'm running out of time, so I'll just close with, this is really a bad bill. And I hope that you seriously look into what it would do and the rationale behind it, and do not pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck and Ernie.
I guess I'll go first. I'm Chuck. You used my name. I'm Chuck Willer, director of the Coast Range Association. I've been studying forest lands for 25 years in Oregon. I am a small woodland owner. I want to speak in favor of House Bill 2495. And I could speak for an hour in support of the bill and on other issues. My written comments have been submitted. It's almost like an alternative reality every time I come to Salem and testify on something and hear the industry's version or whatever. I've done some research on forest landowner taxation payment, whether it's harvest or property taxes. Large industrial owners from 1990 to 2015 have seen an 80% plus reduction in contributions of any form of taxation that goes to local government. That's a fact. The figures on taxes paid, Representative Hovey showed, I do not believe were inflation adjusted figures. You really have to go look back in 1990 where, let's say, $70 million was paid, and then today, like $40 million. Well, when you adjust for inflation, it's a huge reduction. The Legislative Revenue Office turns out reports on timber payments that are not inflation adjusted. Please request all your reports in inflation adjusted dollars. The decline has been massive. General forest taxation in Oregon has declined 70% for all landowners at a time when counties are facing severe burdens for social welfare. If you wanted to prevent forest fires, and this 4% from harvest activities versus all ignitions, that's another bogus thing. We have a lot of homeless living out in the forest. Homeless that didn't live there 25 years ago, and counties don't have the money to do anything about that issue. If you wanted to prevent future forest fires in a drier climate, help get the homeless homes and get them out of the woods. And counties have no money because the big timber boys don't pay taxes anymore. And then they have the gall to come here and say they're paying their fair share when the facts say otherwise. So the committee needs to look into a few things. Look at inflation-adjusted dollars. Look at the massive decline in payments. This bill is just a small step where we should be going. Thank you.
Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Ernie Nemi. I'm president of Natural Resource Economics in Eugene. I've been looking at the economic issues associated with forest management in this state for more than 35 years. And I want to provide to you some information that I hope will be useful to you as you try to understand the economic context of House Bill 2495. The first point is that industrial timberland owners extract about $1 billion from these lands every year. I show one calculation. There are other calculations you could make, but it's about $1 billion. The rest of my presentation tries to give you some information on how they are able to take away $1 billion per year. One way that they can do that is that over the past several decades, they have taken money away from workers within the industry. They used to pay workers in this industry a premium of about 30% compared to other workers in industrial sectors. They now have taken that 30% away. That's about $15,000 per worker. That's about $350 million per year for all of the workers within just the manufacturing sector. There's more if you account for other sectors of the industry. The next page shows that they have taken about $300 million per year from communities by no longer paying just property taxes. There are other taxes that they don't pay that are documented in the tax expenditure report from legislative revenue. The top graph shows, again, from legislative revenue, the fall off in taxes. Again, this is not inflation adjusted, as Chuck just indicated, so the decline is even more. The tax that is indicated on the right of the graph, that actually goes back to the industry from the left pocket to the right pocket. It does not go to communities.
The property tax avoidance is about $300 million. And then the bottom slide comes from Department of Forestry and shows how much money would be paid if the 18 counties or the 18 counties of the ONC counties in Western Oregon, if we had a Washington tax or we had the California tax. Actually, since this graph was prepared by DOF, California has raised its timber harvest tax to look an awful lot like Washington's. What we see is that for the period shown, if we had for these 18 counties, if we had a system similar to Washington's, the general purpose tax from the a forest products harvest tax would be about $40 million, of which if you had the Washington system, this is the dotted line, about 80% of that would go directly to counties. My last page shows additional costs that Oregonians pick up so that the landowners can take their $1 billion away every year. As Oregonians, we incur these costs because industrial timber harvest practices give us less water in our streams, warmer water, less productive, less healthy habitat, increases the risk of toxic water, which we saw manifesting itself in Salem this last year. And then we see that the carbon emissions, using information from BLM, updated to current research, that the value, the damages resulting from the timber harvest carbon emissions exceed the value of the logs produced by about 40 to 1. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Smith.
Just briefly, and I know time's of the essence. I think Governor Brown and Representative Finley are on the right track in that there's a lot of conflicting information here and a lot of passion on both sides. And to me, it seems like the notion of having everyone come together and further flush out this issue merits strong consideration.
Thank you.
Just want to share that.
Anything else? That completes the testimony for today. I'm closing the public hearings on House Bill 2073-2495. There's no other business before us today. We're adjourned.